And you are listening to Northern Community Radio. We're 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, 103.9 Ely, KAXE.org. And you can tell your smart speaker to play KAXE. We connect you to Northern Minnesota. Up next, it's the World Cafe.
When you're having a bad day or you're going through a tough time, when it all just feels like too much, one thing that can help is calling up an old friend, getting together, having a cup of tea, and just talking with someone you know understands you. That's the kind of friendship the Softies have.
There's never dead air. Like, we could just talk all night long, all the time, still. Just, it's ridiculous.
That is Jen Spraja of the Softies. The Softies formed in the mid-90s, and band member Rose Melberg talks about why they wanted to release their first new album in over two decades.
I said, it's time. We were both going through a lot of stuff, and I was like, I think it's time. The world needs it. I said, the world needs another Softies album.
There's gotta be more to love.
So settle in and let the Softies take care of you with a live performance today. I'm Raina Duras, and this is World Cafe.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with a special edition of the Up North Report. World War I, known at the time as the Great War, officially ended when the Treaty of Versailles was signed on June 28, 1919. However, fighting ceased 7 months earlier when an armistice between the Allied nations and Germany went into effect on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. For that reason, November 11, 1918 is generally regarded as the end of the war to end all wars. Veterans Day continues to be observed on November 11th, regardless of which day of the week on which it falls. In honor of the patriotic holiday, we bring you this rebroadcast of a conversation I had about an effort to clean headstones in Hibbing and the memory of a World War I soldier whose legacy won't be forgotten. In Hibbing's Maple Hill Cemetery, the headstones of hundreds and hundreds of veterans will be painstakingly cleaned by volunteers with soft brushes and clean cloths.
Mainly, you just have to really be careful that they're like natural head hair bristles on your brushes, whether, you know, they have special toothbrushes and, you know, bigger scrub brushes, but they've got to have very specific types of bristles on them so that you don't damage the headstones.
Chris Magnuson leads the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Committee for Hibbing and Chisholm. Minnesota's Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program started to connect community resources with service members and military families as part of the Minnesota National Guard. The Yellow Ribbon is a military tradition that symbolizes support for the troops. Magnuson and other volunteers, along with members of the National Guard's 1st Squadron 94th Cavalry, recently spent time in Maple Hill before Memorial Day. They learned the proper techniques for cleaning headstones based on national cemetery guidelines. She says Beyond the Yellow Ribbon took on the project under the initial suggestion and guidance of Perpetual Care of Minnesota, a Hibbing company that offers services to keep graves well attended. Magnuson is a Marine Corps veteran herself, and she says ensuring those who gave their lives in service of the country aren't lost to history is an ongoing effort. This summer's volunteer headstone cleaning project is another way to give back.
Oh, it's so much a part of our history and, you know, our country's history and our community history. You know, they just gave so much. You know, they paid the ultimate price to ensure that we have the freedoms we have today.
Perpetual Care also recently led efforts to replace a headstone in the cemetery in honor of a World War I soldier killed in action at the age of 22. Corporal Norman Kenneth Box's grave was marked with a simple and neglected footstone they accidentally stumbled upon.
It was covered up, it was dirty, it was scratched up, and they had immediately recognized they're both World War history buffs, so they were familiar with the date that he died and the unit he belonged to. So they just got interested and started digging more to find out more about his history and his ties to the region here.
They learned that Norman was born in Ontario, Canada, and his family emigrated to the United States between 1895 and 1900. By 1905, when he was 10 years old, they lived in St. Louis County, according to census records. He married Alphazine Gosselin on April 23, 1918, and shipped out to France by June. He served in the 359th Infantry Regiment, and on November 6th, Norman Box was killed in action, one day shy of his 23rd birthday. The armistice was signed 5 days later, ending the war. His wife remarried and upon her own death was laid to rest by Norman's side. Perpetual Care was able to acquire a government-furnished veteran headstone for Norman, who was one of 40 soldiers buried in Maple Hill who were killed in action. And Magnuson and others organized a recent honor guard ceremony to commemorate his service, which was attended by descendants of his widow, with whom Norman was never able to have children of his own. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras. Sometimes you just need a hug. And that's exactly what the Softies music feels like. The Softies are a duo of Rose Melberg and Jen Spraja. They formed in the mid-90s in Portland, Oregon, and released an EP and 3 albums of warm, cozy songs about love and crushes and heartbreak together before taking a pause at the turn of the millennium. But their friendship was always the basis of the band, and it kept going strong as their lives changed, relationships began and ended, and even when they moved to different cities. Now, the Softies have returned with their first album in 24 years called The Bed I Made, and listening to it is a lot like picking up with an old friend exactly where you left off, like no time has passed. Coming up, Rose and Jen talk about why it was time to make a new record, what's been happening in their lives, and what it felt like to come back to songwriting as a duo. They also talk about their early days in Portland, the Riot Grrrl movement, and their friendship with Elliott Smith. But we start this session with a live performance of a song from their new album, The Bed I Made. This is The Softies' I Said What I Said, recorded live for the World Cafe.
Thank you.
Performed live for the World Cafe, that was I Said What I Said from the Softies. It's a song from their new album, The Bet I Made. My name is Brayna Duras. This is World Cafe. My guests today are the Softies, Rose Melberg and Jen Spraja. Welcome to the World Cafe.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
It has been 24 years since you released your last album, Holiday in Rhode Island. Were you always planning to release another one, or was that supposed to be the last one?
We never broke up. We toyed with the idea, but life got kind of crazy and messy, and I never gave up on the idea. I always knew that there would be at least one more album, because I knew we weren't done yet. I knew we were kind of just getting started with those first albums, but we weren't sure when. I kind of imagined it maybe when Jen's kids were older, so I thought maybe it would be in like 5 or 6 years or something like that, but the time, everything just fell together perfectly for this to happen.
Well, I know, Rose, you were making your own music sort of in that time in between.
Yeah.
Jen, you weren't making music so much.
No.
Why did you stop?
I was really focused on my design career, and then I had some struggles getting some kids here. So that was my focus, very focused on getting kids here. And then I had two at the same time, so I have twins. And then everything was just...
Life happens.
Boom. Yeah.
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 Yeah. How did you start writing again?
I got really inspired and fell in love with music again after the pandemic times. And I really missed going to shows and the world. And I had some riffs and some ideas. And we just got together at Rose's house. And we had a fun weekend where we just started... Like, we had the beginnings of 8 songs at the end of the weekend.
Was it, like, the plan to, okay, you know, I have these things, let's try to think about making an album, or were you just like, let's go play for fun?
No, we knew. Yeah. I said, it's time.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
Guitar?
I said, it's time. We were both going through a lot of stuff, and I was like, I think it's time. The world needs it.
Yeah.
I said, the world needs another Softies album.
Yeah.
And so we knew we were starting to write an album.
Yeah.
We were doing it for that purpose. And Jen was sort of getting... practiced again, and I was giving her song prompts and things like that to sort of loosen up the gears a little and get her writing again. And we didn't know what it would be because we hadn't done it in so long. It was hard to remember, kind of like, gosh, how did we write songs together and how? But it came back pretty quickly, and we found a few new ways to do it as well. But we knew from the beginning that the time had come.
I'll tell you, sometimes when I am getting ready for an interview and I listen to the album a whole bunch of times, and if it's a band or an artist who makes, and I'm going to quote unquote, sad music, mm-hmm. sometimes it can be really hard because you get up in the morning, you're like, hey, time to listen to this album, go
right,
to work,
gotta get
and you
sad.
Get to work, and you're like,
gotta get sad for the day.
But listening to The Bet I Made, I did not feel like that. I felt it, well, the lyrics, you know, you could say there's sad lyrical content that doesn't feel... depressing or morose. It felt reassuring or like being with a friend. And so in your mind, what does a new Softies album give a world that needs it?
Well, it's kind of exactly that, because also this album was born because Jen was going through a rough time, and it was like an act of love for me to be like, how can I support Jen the most? I'm going to start writing songs for us to play because this will make her really happy. And so there is a lot of comfort in these songs, because that was sort of the intention behind a lot of it, was like, we are supporting each other through hard times. I want to be reassuring to Jen. I want to bring back her musical confidence and her creativity. And so there's a lot of reassurance on the record. It's like, everything's going to be okay. I know this is really hard. This is really universal, you know, for every heavy lyric, there's like a, but anyway, like that thing of just normalizing hard feelings and going about your day and going about your life and kind of dialing back the drama. So if you can add a little bit of levity or a little bit of beauty or some melody, like there's ways to lift up those sad feelings. And that was, if there was any intention, that's what it was.
Yeah. I'll quickly reintroduce you. I'm talking to the Softies on World Cafe. I know that you both lost your moms around the same time. How close together did that happen?
About 2 months.
Yeah, a couple months.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So it was really... And so writing this album was a way to sort of help lift you both up.
Very much so.
Yeah. The Softies, I mean, you've always written songs about unrequited love. And when you're writing about romantic loss, that's kind of a different thing than writing about the loss of a family member. Could you talk about that, writing about a different kind of grief?
So many different kinds of grief.
Yeah.
Well, there's like some songs that are so specifically about my mom that no one could really... I don't think anyone could put a... Well, actually, someone did tell me that they... Because 23rd birthday is about my mom, and I felt like it's so clearly about that. But then someone told me, oh, I thought it was, you know, about something else or a romantic thing. Or I think someone thought it was about you, maybe. But we don't even play that one live because it's a little bit sad and specific. So there are songs on the album that could be... heard as romantic grief, but it's that there's an element of the overarching experience of grief throughout the album on all kinds of levels. We touch on the grief of losing touch with our younger selves and also just, you know, settling into middle age and seeing what that's all about, and even grieving parts of ourselves that we're done with, that like I don't want to go back to this person I was or these habits or behaviors, but you still sort of grieve it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like missing your kids when they're little. You don't want them to be little again, but you still have that grief of just like, oh.
Sure.
So that's all over the album. So many, it's just sprinkled with different types of loss and longing, and it all kind of blends together sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the next song that we're going to hear you perform is one that immediately caught my attention when I listened to the record, and I was really glad to find out that you were going to play it for us. I think it's just such a beautiful way to express grief. The song's called Dial Tone, and I was wondering if you could talk about writing it.
Sure. That one was a cool one.
Yeah, so Rose gave me a prompt of birthday, like write a song about birthday. Whatever that means. And the first thing I thought of was just that I can't call my mom anymore, because she would always call me on my birthday and sing happy birthday over the phone. And like, I talked to my brother and then I talked to my dad, and all these three people have passed away at this point in my life. So it was just, that was my big grief song.
Yeah.
But it was sweet because she wrote the first half and I wrote the second half. So it was a really, really collaborative. We don't often collaborate lyrically. And so it was really cool that Jen had the first couple lines. And I tweaked it a little bit. I added the harmony. And then I wrote the chorus and the last verse. So it feels like one of those songs that's like half and half.
Oh, I love that.
And so we have this equal ownership to it because it's really about both of our experience of grief. And those little things you don't think about, like, oh, I'll never... I mean, not only do you not hear a dial tone anymore ever, because that's what I think of, you know, a lifetime of talking to my mom on analog technology. Those little things where you're like, oh my God, she'll never call me on my birthday again. Or, you know, those singular moments that resonate so deeply when you take the time to really think about it. And so that song... it touched on such a specific thing that we were both feeling so deeply at the time. So it really just, it came out so easy, and it just is this little perfect nugget of a song. And we didn't want to add anything more. I was, you know, like, should I add more guitar? And it was just exactly what it was supposed to be.
Let's listen to Dial Tone. This is the Softies live for World Cafe.
Just to
You just heard the Softies performing their song Dial Tone, maybe my favorite song from the new album, The Bed I Made. I'm Rena Duris. Rose and Jen of the Softies are my guests today on World Cafe. I want you guys to take us back to the beginning of the Softies. Rose, before the Softies, back in the real early 90s, you were in another band called Tiger Trap when you were living in Sacramento. Jen, you were a fan of Tiger Trap. In your words, a super fan.
Yeah.
What did you love about that band?
It changed my life. Like, I was a heavy metal kid, and then I had a housemate that had a radio station, or a there were a DJ on a college radio station, and I wanted to do it too, so I got a radio show. And then we had to play certain songs off of a list of, like, alternative music. And then that's when I heard alternative music, and, you know, like, Green Day was, you know, that's when they were just beginning. And I heard, I tried to play all female music. I had, like, my radio show was called Riot Girl Radio. And I had this split 7-inch that had Bratmobile and Tiger Trap, and I only played the Bratmobile song because I just didn't let the record play all the way through. And then I did one day, and that was a huge moment for me.
And so when Tiger Trap broke up, Jen, you got in touch with Rose. Rose, do you remember what Jen said to you? Because you'd already met, but...
Yeah, I do. Well, because just days previous, I was lamenting the breakup of the band, and I was saying to someone, the saddest part is I'm afraid of losing all the friends that I've made in association with the band. And I was like, especially there's this one girl in Santa Rosa that's so sweet, and like we were kind of pen pals. She had a zine, and I was like, I'll probably never see Jen again. And then, like, 2 days later, she just called me, and she was like, I heard the band broke up, and I wanted to make sure you were okay.
Oh, that's really nice.
And I said, come visit me. And she did.
And you did. And so how did you guys realize that you had musical chemistry together making music?
Well, there was a lot I didn't know. So Rose just played me all of these cool songs and, like, oh, you got to hear this band. And, like, so we just sat on the floor and listened to records. And then, you know, she knew I played guitar, and you got your guitar out. And you're like, this is a new song I'm writing, and you should play on it. It was just...
I was like, just play some notes.
It was so fun. It was just, like, this sweet friendship. Yeah. And we just hit the ground running.
We really did. It was just like... I guess we better tour with these 5 songs that we have. Like, we were just ready to be in a band together. It was so fun. It was so much easier than my previous band that had been so fraught. And I just wanted to do it all the time. I ended up moving to Portland later that year because Jen moved. And I was like, well, I can't live without Jen. So, I only lived in Portland with Jen for 1 year, but we wrote basically 2 albums in that year. That's all we did. Drank wine.
And coffee.
Yeah. And just wrote music constantly.
That first song that you wrote together was Love Seat. We're going to play a clip of that right now. We'll come right back.
Cherry red rose, do you embalm me in the face?
The Softies, Love Seat. That's from their 1994 EP of the same name. Now, it might surprise you to find out that one of the members of the Softies came up in the metal scene. You'll hear about that and how Rose and Jen met each other after these words on World Cafe. Welcome back to the World Cafe. My name is Raina Duris. The Softies have a new album called The Bed I Made. Today, I'm joined by the Softies, Rose Melberg and Jen Spraja, who formed the band together in the mid-90s in Portland.
So Jen, before all of this, you were in the Bay Area, like you said. You kind of came up in the metal scene. That might surprise people listening to your music. What do you remember from those days before you... Met Rose.
Well, all I wanted was to be a guitar player that was taken seriously. Good luck. You know, being a woman, being a female.
In 1987 or whatever.
And so I always found that to be really disappointing and frustrating.
Yeah.
I was just so motivated to be the best guitar player I could be.
Yeah.
But then I stumbled into this genre where none of that mattered. And you could meet your heroes. Wow. What? Like... goodbye, heavy metal. That was fun. But there I was, just meeting people, exchanging fanzines. You know, it was like night and day.
Do you see any connection between those two genres?
No. No. I mean...
You're the connection. What you've done with the Softies is the connection.
I guess, you know? So, because...
Jen spent all her teen years just practicing arpeggios and scales and stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of part of why the Softies is kind of special. Jen's style of guitar playing is rooted in, you know, metal rudiments. And then she kind of made it her own thing and found melody in it.
There's the connection. I'm speaking with the Softies on World Cafe. We're going to hear another performance, and then we'll come back and talk some more. And the next song is from your last album from 2000 called Holiday in Rhode Island. You know, actually, you could say the first lyric to this song could be in a metal song. If I beg you, will you smother me? That could be a metal lyric.
I know. We didn't play that song for a long time because I was like, that seems a bit bleak. It's a bit over melodramatic, like... But it's just really about the desperation of insomnia, where you really feel like, just kill me. I cannot lay here with my eyes open for another second. And so I was just being really dramatic. But of course, I didn't want people to think that I actually wanted to be killed. But it is kind of metal.
Well, let's listen to Sleep Away Your Troubles. This is the Softies, live on World Cafe.
1, 2, 3, 4.
For me.
The Softies performing live for World Cafe. That was Sleep Away Your Troubles from their album Holiday in Rhode Island, released in the year 2000. They have a new album called The Bed I Made out now. Jen and Rose are here with me. I'm Raina Duris. Early on as the Softies, you toured with Elliott Smith. Could you talk about the contrast between Elliott and what he was doing and the rest of the scene that was happening in Portland at that time in the early 90s?
I mean, obviously, Elliott really stuck out as a really special, unique talent. And, you know, that is also partly what drew me to Portland. I was like, if this is whatever's in the water in Portland mm-hmm. for songwriters, I want to go to that well and drink from it, because it meant a lot to me to be a little bit closer to Elliott and be able to be friends with him and play shows with him and try to, you know, get some of that vibe and that magic off of him. And the tour was definitely amazing for that. It was, you know, really inspiring. And he was very sweet and supportive of us.
The Riot Grrrl scene was also flourishing in the Pacific Northwest around that time. I mean, you had your radio show, Jen. How did you fit into that? Was there solidarity at all as a band with women in it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when Tiger Trap started, we were very much a part of that scene, maybe a bit tangentially, but I knew those people because I had been pen pals with Allison Wolf from Bratmobile from when I was 18. So really before Bratmobile was even really a real band, we were already pen pals. And so I knew them. I knew their scene. I loved their music. I loved the bands. It really opened up a lot for me as a, you know, growing up in Sacramento, which is a dude-heavy music scene in Sacramento in the 90s, and really trying to find my place and find some confidence. And she really helped with that. And so I felt a kinship with the politics and the aesthetic, but my musical tastes were elsewhere. Well, in addition to, I love any type of bratty punk music is straight to my heart. So I wanted to be like a noisy pop band, but fast enough that people would consider us punk. Mm-hmm. Like that was sort of how I was approaching it. So, the easy answer is a deep kinship in the spirit of it and the permission that it gave us to make a band like the Softies. It really blew my mind wide open about what was possible rather than just trying to be one of the guys.
Yeah. I feel like that idea of not trying to be one of the guys and singing about things that may be traditionally viewed as girly or feminine has been historically viewed as frivolous. At the time, I feel like now these days, vulnerability and writing about that stuff is a little bit more accepted. Like there's lots of singer-songwriters who write kind of like, almost like they're reading their diaries. But then, how was that perceived? How was that vulnerability or those maybe more quote-unquote feminine topics?
I mean, there was so much misogyny in the scene back in the day, and people would use pretty reductive language about what we did a lot. And it was hard because, yeah, we just sounded like a sweet pop band, but we came from punk. Like we were, it was political just by virtue of what we were doing as just being two women playing alone, writing vulnerable songs, speaking truth, all these things. But it was hard to feel like we were really getting the respect we wanted. And so I think it made us maybe diminish what we were doing in our own minds sometimes. I think we'd be like, oh, we just have this little thing, and because we weren't really being acknowledged as like a legitimate part of the community or whatever. Yeah. And I think it's because we kind of believed what was being said. And it took a long time to grow our sense of importance within our scene and acknowledge that, like, no, wait, we are songwriters and this is important music and we're not reading from our diary. We are thoughtfully, intentionally writing music that is difficult, and that feels very brave, and being brave is part of what being a punk is. And so I kind of finally stopped feeling like I had to explain that to people, like, take me seriously, I'm a punk. But it only took 30 years. And now here we are.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, especially I think about, there's some great or at least what I interpreted as great heartbreak songs on this new album, The Bed I Made. And one of them we're going to hear to close it out in a few minutes. I think some people think, writing about crushes is something like a teenager has, whatever. Do you at all find it any harder to write about things like that as you get older? No. I think I know the answer is no, but...
No, I think I've got 3 crushes right now. I'm just like, still me.
We're still so much ourselves. It's really funny. Like, our tour manager can attest. We are just like 12-year-olds when we get together. And those feelings are real. Like,
yeah.
Navigating life at this age sometimes feels like it's just like a weird second adolescence. There's, everything's kind of new, but also familiar and... like, gosh, I thought I would be better at this by now. Or like, oh, this old feeling. You can always pull upon those emotions. It is visceral, like the feeling of a heartbreak or the unrequited love or that. It doesn't take much. Any kind of rejection can hit that same spot. And we still deal with that all the time. We're in different places romantically right now, but it's never hard to bring up a romantic disappointment.
I'm talking to the Softies on World Cafe. Before we get to the last performance, I have one more question for each of you, because I know, you know, in addition to having this long creative partnership, you're best friends. I can tell even just like when you talk, like the way you look at each other, it's beautiful. So I want to ask you, each of you, I'll start with Rose. Rose, what is your favorite thing about Jen?
Jen is so funny. She's so funny. Because I don't think Jen truly throughout our friendship knows how funny she is to me and how much she makes me laugh and how happy she makes me when we're together. You surprise me so much with how funny you are.
And Jen, what's your favorite thing about Rose?
Rose knows me better than anyone on this planet. I just feel like, I don't know. I don't want to think about which one of us is going to go first. Yeah, we're just going to jump off a cliff.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's jump off a cliff together. I'm just going to jump in your coffin. And
like a pharaoh being, entombed.
Exactly. It's in our wills.
I just love that there's never dead air. Like, we could just talk all night long, all the time, still. Just, mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
It is.
You're just my favorite person.
Yeah, I know. You're my favorite person. Again, we know each other better than anyone because, you know, we've been practically a married couple for longer than any marriage that we've had so far. 3 between us.
To close out, you're going to play your song California Highway 99 from your new album. It mentions Sacramento. It mentions crying in a Chevy Malibu. There's like nothing more satisfyingly melancholy than crying while driving.
I know.
Could you tell us about writing this song before we hear it?
Yeah, it's actually kind of interesting. I actually started writing that song about 23 years ago. I had a couple lines that I wrote that night around the time that thing happened. So it was a very old story about a very old feeling. But... I was doing a week of prompted songwriting with a friend, and the prompt was cars, beep, beep. And those first couple lines popped into my head. I was like, oh my God, that Softie song I never finished. The night I drove away from you and rented Chevy Malibu. Like that whole, I never had finished that song. It had just been sitting in my consciousness for all these years. And the rest of the song just poured out of me like in like 20 minutes. I was like, oh my God, that story was waiting to be told for all these years. But at the time, I think it was too raw and real. And I needed that space between to actually write the song about that night. And so it's all very real. It is real heartbreak. It's old heartbreak. It's cool to have that perspective, to be able to write about it. But I can remember the feelings like it was yesterday, which is why the song came out so easily.
Yeah. Well, it's not quite Thelma and Louise driving away off the cliff.
Not yet.
But here is California Highway 99. It's the Softies performing live for the World Cafe.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Live for the World Cafe, the Softies with California Highway 99. That's a song on their new album, The Bet I Made. I've been talking to Rose Melberg and Jen Spraja of the Softies today. Rose, Jen, thank you so much for being here with me.
Thanks for having us.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
This is great.
Thank you.
I'm Rena Duras, back in a moment with more World Cafe. Before the break here on World Cafe, you heard a session with the Softies. You can see that session at worldcafe.org. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel and see it there at youtube.com/worldcafe. And now, Annie Lennox walking on something that's the opposite of soft, broken glass.
Broken glass.
so many ways to fuck up a life. I try to be original. Done plenty more wrong than I ever did right. Still, I'm not a criminal. If I wanted to make this last even longer, I'd do what I did, only sweeter and strong. But that wouldn't stop my true nature from showing up eventually. What we started, and we won't have regrets. I'm gonna leave you with my good side. I'm gonna leave you with my good side. I'm gonna leave you with my good side.
Good side. That's Liz Phair closing out this hour of World Cafe. I want to say thank you again to my guests this hour, the Softies, as well as World Cafe producer Miguel Perez for his work on that session. Thanks as well to our affiliates all across the country for supporting World Cafe and bringing this show to you. We produce this show at WXPN at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. I'm Raina Duras. Thanks for listening to World Cafe from NPR.
World Cafe is supported by the Wallace Foundation, working to develop and share practices that can improve learning and enrichment for young people and the vitality of the arts for everyone. Ideas and information at wallacefoundation.org. And by the Cy Sims Foundation, partnering with organizations and people since 1985, working for a better and more just future for all. More information is available at cysimsfoundation.org.
Another hour ahead of the World Cafe. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Check out our playlist, podcasts, and more at KAXE.org.
Here at KAXE, we're all about creating community. Whether it's discussing arts or music or upcoming events, we can't do what we do here at KXE without your support and your participation. And we do that by inviting others to take part in the conversation.